And this is the moment of phone calls, conversations with Linda, her interactive hour with you, when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast with Linda Moulton Howe here. Linda, any updates to some of your previous stories?
Well, let's see. I think that probably the one that I hear the most about still are the strange booms.
Mm-hmm.
And
sure do.
If you couple that with one of the most recent articles, I think it was in Scientific American, about that we may be on a planet that is going to change its poles within, when they say 1,000 years, that seems like a long time. It's short geologically. And as I understand it, the rate in which they are measuring this change, the way the magnetic fields are moving, is about 10 times faster than they expected. And the reason why I brought this up is, if that interview that I did with the Stanford geophysicist a year or so ago was any insight into the possibility that the core of the Earth is changing and that there is more fluidity in the mantle now, they know that, and it may be related to all of this water that seems to be sort of trapped in the mantle. And then you've got the magnetic fields that are changing rapidly. Maybe all of those things together are adding up to some huge change going on in the Earth that, independent of humans, is going to do its thing, so to speak, no matter what. And we may be headed toward more seismic events, more volcanic events, on a planet that's 4.5 billion years old. And we would have expected by now that maybe it would be quieter. But all of the science papers that I've been reading is that we are on a really unpredictable planet, and that it is not becoming quieter. It's becoming more active. And I think that it is reflected in the fact that some of the things that people are hearing and that they're even recording keep going on from 2011, when all of this shake, rattle, roll, booms, trumpets began. And you would think by 2014, it either would have stopped or we would have a firm answer. Isn't it incredible that we still don't have any comments from the government, no comments from Homeland Security or the Department of Defense, probably interest in what is happening, but we have a citizens reporting from around not just the United States, Canada, and lots of parts of the world, where there are multiple ear witnesses at the same time who are reporting really, really strange sounds as they've not heard before. And all of this adds up to me that we are on a planet separate from extraterrestrials, separate from other phenomena, that this planet is unpredictable and is really alive, and that how this unfolds over the rest of the century with all these other forces, such as what is happening with CO2 and methane and getting warmer? What will this planet do on its own? It's quite a time to be alive, because this century has no guarantees. I don't think there's any guarantees about what is going to happen between now and New Year's Eve going into 22.
And we're going to have to hold on. It's going to be one heck of a roller coaster ride, Linda.
Yeah, every day, everybody's got to be ready for change, just like those deer birds and the deer pollinators and all of this earth life that are scrambling just to get food.
All right, let's go to the phones now. Stephen is in Las Vegas. Welcome to the show, Stephen. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi, Linda. It's
Hi.
An honor to talk to the both of you, longtime listener here.
Thank you.
Anyhow, I had sort of, I know this is kind of a little off topic, I had a sort of a cryptozoology question. I just read a really disturbing post from one of my friends who lives in the Denver, Colorado area, and she posted that some sort of creature that she could only describe as a dark-skinned, pygmy, hairless creature, naked with an extra set of arms, tried to break into her house.
You mean she found this through a window or a door?
Yes. Yes, through the window on the front door of her house. Jeez. And she had to physically hold the door closed so she could lock it. And then she sort of hunkered down with a bunch of weapons. And it sounds far-fetched, obviously, but I've known this person a couple years now, and I only know her to be of sound mind and body, and she does not currently, nor was not, abusing any substances that cause chemical changes in the body that make you see stuff like that, et cetera, et cetera.
What did she intuitively feel that this was?
She just described it as a naked black little person with an extra set of arms.
An extra set of arms.
Yes, like four arms.
Position.
Forearms and two legs?
Bipedal. Yes, forearms and two legs.
But where would the extra pair of arms?
Sort of in the abdomen area.
Well, what can one say to a story like this? I know that there are strange things happening on this planet every day, and we need photographs, and then when the photographs are presented, they're always attacked as photoshopped. But was she able to do anything with a cell phone or something else to try to get a photograph before whatever it was went away?
I think she was sort of too incomprehensibly terrified. Yeah, she's also been saying that people's house pets, like outside cats and dogs in the neighborhood, have been disappearing lately. So whether that potentially, correlates, I don't know, but it's sort of, strangely coincidental.
Did she report this to the police?
I asked her if she made a police report, but I don't know that for a fact.
It would be interesting for her to make a first-hand witness phone call to an authority like police.
Are they going to believe her, Linda?
Well, and to ask, to make the call with the context of, have you received any other reports from people about, and then she describe it, and in the process of trying to see if there have been any other reports, she might learn something.
Sounds like something that could be deformed. What do you think?
Yeah, the mutant idea was what was in the back of my mind, but one thing she could do is draw an illustration from the best of her memory as close to the colors using crayons or colored pencils to everything that she remembers about it. I'd be interested in seeing if she would do an illustration. And I think it would be interesting and valuable for her to call police and see if they've had any other reports.
Let's go to Paul, truck driver now in Arkansas. Paul, thanks for calling in. Go ahead.
Hi. Hi, George. Hi, Linda.
Hi.
Linda, I appreciate the work you do. You do one heck of a job.
Well, thank you.
I got some complaints about that global warming thing you've been popped off about. Like Obama, he stood in front of the UN and talked about all this and all that. But he knows what's killing the bees, okay? But do you think that they would stop that, just like the cheetah did when they killed the bald eagles back in the 70s? How long did it take for them to correct that problem? And the global warming thing, China wasn't even there. India's not going to do anything. So I'm just saying the money people, the people in charge know what's causing a lot of it. And if they would stop that problem, then they wouldn't have to make the little people suffer so much. You understand what I'm saying?
I do, and I understand that there's still controversy, but I just put up on September 23rd at Earth Files on my headlines page. It was related to this UN climate summit, but I received an email from somebody who reads what is called Divest Invest Philanthropy. And they wanted me to know that the Rockefeller Brothers Fund of $50 billion in assets that made all of their money on oil over the last many decades have announced their plans to divest entirely away from fossil fuel and to invest in renewable energy technologies. This was published in Divest Invest Philanthropy, which is used by the 1%. And the multi-millionaire, billionaire crowd. But this was, I went and read this. I read this at this philanthropy website. And so I think that it is true, and that if the Rockefeller's Brothers Fund is switching and changing what they are going to be investing in away from fossil fuel, and it is supposed to be partly out of concern over what is happening on the planet. And other corporations and large investments did start actively switching from fossil into something else. It could be significant, and bottom line, it means that people who pride themselves on investments that make a tremendous amount of money are concerned enough at some level to start making some kind of change. And I think that this is the question. Is humanity going to be able to survive its own cut off your nose to spite your face philosophy and wait until the islands go under? It's happening. See, there are hard facts anybody can learn about. It's what do we do about it? Are we going to try to have any impact or not? And that, to me, is the big issue. This is why I think it's controversial. Some people just want to say, let's just see what the Earth does on its own. And others are saying, look, there's a lot of data piling up at 1,000 different levels, and it's saying that we better try to do something because we are going to have rising sea levels, and we're going to have more fires, and we're going to have more drought in some places and a lot more water and floods in others. And after a while, I know in the most recent Time magazine, there was another article by somebody who also works in the investment financial area. And they were raising the concern that we are facing the possibility that weather alone, the violence of increasing energy, of water in a warmer atmosphere, and what's going to happen in a much more intense climate, that this one category, weather impacts on the planet, could begin gutting government ability to sustain budgets. And that once that happens, it's like a collapsing house of cards.
Have you looked at the Yellowstone caldera yet, Linda?
Yes, I talked with the chief. He's the chief scientist there at the volcano laboratory. He's based, I think it's Palo Alto or Menlo Park. I think it's Menlo Park. And we went into this whole issue of what is happening in the park that could presage some gigantic eruption like what happened about, I think it was 550,000 years or 600,000 years ago. And he said, in general, they have one expectation of what would have to be happening before that would occur. And that is, they would have to have a series of seismic earthquakes that would be probably 5 and above, and that they would keep on going, and that they would have measurements now with high-tech equipment that could tell that there was mantle movement coming up close to the surface in a rushing sort of way, and that neither of those are present, and that all of those, when they have swarms in Yellowstone Park, the seismic swarms have been there for decades and decades, and they are part of the fact that it is highly active with gas underneath the ground. There is obviously hot mantle that is heating up water underground that causes the fountains and all of that. But it's been in this sort of, we'll call it quasi-dynamic state of hot water that is heated from below in that park for more than a century, and that there have been, in the past, there have been some large, let's say, a volcanic kind of eruption, but the big caldera blowing its stack that might take out, as they say, 10 or 11 states, it's sort of a figure of speech.
No, but it could.
It would. It's because that would be a gigantic release of dust and dirt and rocks, and you are then getting into what happened at Mount St. Helens. The sky went absolutely black in the afternoon. Black. Nobody could see anything. And if the caldera would blow like it did half a million years ago, then there'd be the violence of it would be horrible. But right now, there is no hard data that suggests that's going to happen anytime imminently. A whole lot more things would have to happen. And secondly, he also pointed out, yes, they have three, we'll call them caldera blowing out sized events back approximately every, I think it's 500 or 600,000
years.
Well, those three might, this is his, I remember this was a goal, might never happen again. It is back to this issue of being on a planet in which some places where there's been volcanic activity cease and they seem to go extinct. Not that they might not come back alive, but they tend to go or will go to what is called an extinct phase. And it's possible, not guaranteed, but it's possible that Yellowstone will never have another eruption as violent as the one that made that great caldera and would wipe out a dozen states and people and animals, trees and everything. And if that's the case, it could keep on rumbling and having all of these swarms for decade after decade after decade, and that's all it would be. It would rock and roll, but it would not explode.
What an active planet, Linda.
It is a very active planet, and I read something recently where a scientist said, the one thing about being on planet Earth is we can't plan for anything for certain, that it seems to be constantly in a state of change and flux. Meanwhile, we look at sort of dry, quick frozen Mars that has, it seems, nothing going on in the surface any longer.
We'll be back with final phone calls with Linda in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And of course, Linda Moulton Howe with us. We're going to take phone calls with her. Continue when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We're with Linda Moulton Howe. Linda, the latest story about the Easter Island structure statues is that they walked them into place side by side. I find that hard to believe.
Especially since some people in the human abduction syndrome have talked about being shown in screens by extraterrestrials that there is this neutralizing gravity technology that could put in the big stones and Cheops, could move the Easter Island statues, could make Sacsayhuaman, Ollantaytambo, and that you can't make sense of Earth history without inserting the extraterrestrial card with advanced technology.
No, exactly. Cody's in Wichita, Kansas. Welcome to the program. Cody, go ahead.
Hi. This is my first time being able to call in, but I'm a consistent listener.
Glad you got it.
And I want to thank you, George, first of all, for providing quality shows and keeping us all informed on important topics. Now, back to the subject at hand, I would like to ask maybe if climate change is more of a natural occurrence. I mean, we see many extinctions throughout throughout the history of Earth. I mean, the sulfur-based ozone changed to an oxygen-based ozone. You know, I doubt woolly mammoth was causing emissions or driving, you know, Hummers around or anything like that. So maybe that, you know, and a lot of carbon emission does occur naturally through volcanic eruption and decay of the forest and, you know, natural occurring instances, fires and such. So maybe, and also I would also like to maybe put in the point that it's our hubris, you know, humanity's hubris and arrogance as keepers of this place that has got us into there, instead of maybe thinking of it as we need to save the planet. I'm fairly sure the planet's capable of adapting to whatever we throw at it. So maybe we're just really trying to save ourselves, in essence. I'll take my response off the air.
Sure thing. Cody, yeah, thanks. Go ahead, Linda.
I definitely think that humanity needs to save itself, and that the Earth will be here whether we make it or not. That I would agree. It's just, what kind of planet will it be like, and how long will it take to reconstitute the biodiversity and the species that are being wiped out so quickly? And to take your comment and put it in the context of what I understand from, I don't know, maybe 100, 200 interviews in the last few years with a whole variety of scientists all around the world, and there is a common theme, a common denominator to all those interviews. It is the rate at which we have been changing the atmosphere of the planet that is unlike anything in the record going back in ice or anything they study for about a million years. There has never been anything as rapid as what has happened in just the last century, or if you go back to what is called sort of in political science books as the beginning of the industrial age, it is 1750 onward. And that right now, in 2014, one of those statistics that I gave tonight about what has happened in just 1 year, that CO2 has gone up from 1 year to the next, greater than any measurement in the last 30 years. This is what's beginning to happen all over the place. That it is, when they used to talk 10 years ago about when do we reach a tipping point, and we can't stop the process, the interaction between what's happening in the atmosphere and the Earth, that we will truly be dragged along, whether we are absolutely 100% responsible or not. We're going to be dragged along by an increasingly thick CO2, methane, nitrous oxide atmosphere that is going to be warmer. And in that warmth, it holds more moisture. That's a physics given. And when you have atmosphere that is holding more moisture, it has to come out. And that means it's going to be drenching, horrendous, flooding rains, not soft, gentle rains. And that is the definition of what I understand climate change is now. We are, I think, past the tipping point. They used to draw the line at 400 parts per million. We couldn't go over 400 parts per million, or we were into completely unknown territory about the consequences of what would happen with the weather. And that we are going to face all kinds of changes in where we can grow food, islands are going to go underwater. And to underscore that, that politicians, Republicans and Democrats at the state level in some states, like what in Florida, there was a meeting just a month and a half ago with the governor of Florida, and he called it. He's the one who initiated it with five scientists. And the reason is because every single computer model right now for the state of Florida, at the rate at which they are measuring rain, sea level rise, and all of the repercussions of climate change, that it will be underwater in another, I think it was 40 or 50 years, completely underwater up to like around Okeechobee in that area. And the governor of Florida is reaching out to scientists and say, what do we do? Can we build dikes like they do in Holland? So people are at the political level, they know, they see the writing on the wall, the change is not going to go away, and that it is rapidly moving into another, we'll call it another, maybe a different kind of stability on the earth, but it will be highly different. And one of the most important pieces in tonight that I've raised, because scientists are raising this question, if all of the Amazon rainforest changes to scrubby pine because they're cutting down all of the trees so quickly, and if they keep doing that without stopping over the rest of the century, there is a serious byproduct in the physics of atmosphere and water and the way air moves, and that by losing all of those trees, there will be increasingly less water in the areas where they need rain. And so over the next 90 years, it is becoming increasingly possible that this beautiful, incredible lungs of the earth, the Amazon rainforest, could, by the physics and the dynamic between air, water, and plants, in this case, billions of trees that are rapidly being cut down at such a rate that they now can measure the change in the moisture that is being held in the air where trees are cut down. And that these are the pieces that we won't be able to know exactly for another 90 years, but the computer models are showing that there is going to be increasing drought where we have had the Brazilian rainforest. And I personally, I don't know how you can look at the photograph, the one I've got at Earth Files. It's a recent satellite image of a part of the Amazonian rainforest and all the crisscrossing brown lines where they have been cutting the trees down at such accelerated rates. And it is, again, back to we're cutting off our nose to spite our face in humanity. And the consequence on the other side of that is the earth itself. It's what you just said, the man who just called. The earth is going to respond.
Sure is. It's alive.
When we're on it. And if we are making the most rapid increase in the atmospheric blanket around this planet than ever seen on record going back a million years, then we are responsible for a lot of what is happening, and we are going to have to deal with the consequences.
Let's go east. Mark is in Amsterdam, New York. Mark, welcome to the program. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. Great to be on this show with a lot of variety of great knowledge. Hi, Linda. Hi, George.
Hi, Mark.
My question is about these triangles. I'm a little confused about the triangles. Mm-hmm. Because if they're extraterrestrial, right, and we got extraterrestrial knowledge, and if it's our government experimental crafts, are they spotted elsewhere besides the United States, like in other countries, China, Russia? And I doubt we would share the knowledge with other countries if we got the extraterrestrial knowledge. And are they spotted elsewhere besides the United States?
Yeah.
I know you said Canada. I'm just curious about that.
Yes, absolutely. And go to Earth Files, click on this that part two with David Marler, and down in the website section, I have a very interesting one. All of the triangle reports going back before something like 1700, all the way back into biblical times, it's quite fascinating. It's an amazing website. And in the so-called modern world, that was part of the interview with David Marler, are these cases that Donald Kehoe and others were able to find from the 1800s. And that included seeing, apparently, amateur astronomers looking through a telescope, seeing triangular shapes on the moon, on the limb of the moon and moving, and that there were that won the East Indies. They saw a big triangular craft, and it was, I believe, the year was 1896 or 1876. And then when you get to the 1940s, 50s, and onward, a lot of people forget that in 1947, on the same week, that July, that first week of July, 1947.
Roswell.
Roswell. But over in Phoenix, there was a photographer who worked at the newspaper, Bill Rhodes, and he took photographs with his own camera, and it looked like, some people compared it to a horseshoe, but the way it closed at the end, other people have said it was sort of triangular, not pure delta. It means that these strange, some will call it horseshoe to delta shapes, have been in the sky for a long time. And then you go to one of the most important documents ever leaked, the Psalm 101 training manual about how to recover crashed disks and extraterrestrial bodies. And in one of the sections, it is called Extraterrestrial Technology. This is stamped with the War Department's stamp and dated 1954. And here are drawings of different types of extraterrestrial technology. That's how it's categorized. And the one at the bottom of the page is a triangle with lights at the three corners that is described as, this is a more advanced technology. It's in the 1954 training manual. Okay, then where do we have one of the most dramatic flaps on this planet since 1947 that has exactly what is drawn in that 1954 training manual? Is Belgium. And it started in October of 1989 and went through 1990. And there were physicists who were eyewitnesses. There were pilots. There were military. There were police for a whole period of a year to a year and a half. Why Belgium? Nobody seems to know. And all efforts to say, oh, well, it must be British aerospace in the United States have come up with a new design, and it was triangular, and they were testing it over Belgium. If you read all of the reports, and there have been so many from eyewitnesses who were extremely credible, you are talking about having something that was quite large, coming down low over many eyewitnesses with no sound, and doing remarkable things. Would extraterrestrials focus on a country for a year to a year and a half for some reason? Answer unknown. Would the United States government be flying something experimental over the nation of Belgium for a year and a half? I don't think so. Would British aerospace be using Belgium as a training country for some reason on something? Well, you can say maybe, but nobody has demonstrated any kind of technology coming out of Boeing or British aerospace or Russia or any place on the planet that has the specs of what thousands of eyewitnesses saw over Belgium. And it was the classic delta shape with these configurations of three lights at the vertices and one in the middle.
And huge, right?
They were large. Now, the biggest ever described by people that I personally know of is March 13th, 1997, Phoenix, at 1.8 to 2 miles long.
I mean, how could we have that? How could we possess
it? We did not make it.
There's no way.
There is other intelligence in this universe. It's been interacting with this planet, I think, for millions of years. It's come in waves. It's come in cycles. It is responsible for all kinds of our so-called human cultural mythologies. And the big issue is, are we coming to a time of such transition on this planet geologically and politically that maybe some of those intelligences will come before us front and center, and it will all start anew, a whole new relationship with other life forms in this universe.
Linda, thanks for being on the program. Another series of great shows. We'll see you in October, okay? Linda Moulton Howe. And then, of course, we may change her Thanksgiving Christmas schedule, but I'll let you know what that is, too. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Lattisore, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, George Knapp, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everybody.